Thank you for downloading the Friday Night Comedy Podcast from Radio 4. To find out more, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. But not until you've enjoyed this week's news quiz.
We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a listing from the TV Choice magazine read by Diana Speed.
Channel 4, 8 p.m. Born in the Wild. Professor Joy Rydenburg and vet Mark Evans explore the Earth's greatest species as they try to reproduce in some of the most hostile environments on the planet.
Now, thanks to Sean Barrett for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, news quiz stalwart Jeremy Hardy with journalist and broadcaster Samira Ahmed. And opposite them on my left, comedians Bob Mills and Lucy Porter. Jeremy, who isn't going anywhere fast?
The British public, because the government sacked loads of passport makers. They closed down the old passport factories of Vauxhall. And now they're hurriedly redeploying people. But instead of getting them making passports, they've got them on a helpline. So you phone up, you say, I can't get a passport, and they go, I know. Isn't it awful? I'd love to help, but all we've got is a Romeo machine and an old Amstrad. That's all we've got for the whole country. I reckon you should just make your own at home. Because
nip up to Buckingham Palace, get the Queen to sign it.
Yeah. I think they should do away with passports and you should just take someone along who can vouch for you. You might as well just have a mate who looks trustworthy to go with you to the airport and say, he's all right, this one. I'll wait here till he gets back from holiday. And if there's any trouble, I'll take it. You know, I'll be responsible. Because I was trying to get into a club in Sheffield last night, and they just had a one-in, one-out policy. They had a man about Bob's size on the door, and as somebody came out, somebody went in. Instead of departures and arrivals, every time somebody arrives, somebody else can... Because the thing is, I don't think many people are terrorists.
Jeremy, so,
what?
Trying to get into a club.
It was actually the National Trust. I'll admit. I was trying to get into a club in Sheffield. I was in Sheffield. What else are you going to do? You're not going to make any steel anymore, are you? So you go to a club. But Bob and I were talking before about the joys of Dorset, because you don't have to go abroad. It's stressful going abroad. You waste a year on TripAdvisor reading miserable people saying, well, we weren't very pleased with the countertops. Thing is, what they should do at the passport office is just have a computer in the front. You Google the place that you were going to go to. If, say, you want to go to Italy, they show you a picture of Lean Tower of Pizza, tin of ravioli, give you a cornetto, and you go home, and you've saved yourself an enormous amount of stress.
Here's the thing. I had a new passport recently, and you're not supposed to smile. Supposed to smile. You have to be very serious. There's all sorts of rules now. You're not supposed to smile because I think it confuses the facial recognition software. I think you're not supposed to...
And the French...
Yes. Also, I think you're not supposed to smile on Ryanair flights because there's a £20 surcharge.
The problem is, there is a big passport shortage, of which there was none. David Cameron said there isn't a backlog. There's been 300,000 extra people applying because the economy is doing so well, everyone's going on holiday. And I think we may be about 10% behind. But it's because we're British and that's what we do. We book the holiday, we pay the money to the people, we pack our cases, and then we say, right, we need to leave at 4. Where's the passport?
Because I had to get passports for the babies. I have two babies, and they look exactly the same, but I've had to pay for two passports. I think what I might do is stay in the country and sell their passports because they look like babies. And a baby looks like another baby. I hate to break it to parents and grandparents out there.
That's not always true. There are one or two that look like turnips, honestly. You know when your child says, what do you think I should call her? What do you think she looks like? And you think, root vegetable, I have no...
And then with this iris recognition thing, surely all you have to do is look at them. And they should be able to just let you go.
Mine never works. Have you done that, Iris? It never, ever works.
No, it doesn't
works.
Work.
It's because you're too short.
I can't, yes.
You're like me.
It's true. It's absolutely true. I can't be seen properly, but it's a shorter queue. So I go, no, it's not going to work. And then they say, go and see that man. And then you're ahead of the queue. It's absolutely fantastic. because of a backlog at the passport office, up to 500,000 people risk not getting their passports in time for their holidays and will have to watch England lose the World Cup on television like the rest of us. The number of applications is at its highest for 12 years, as many desperately try to flee before Nigel Farage seals the borders. In Europe, up to World War I, passports were not required, which is how millions of Germans were able to just wander into Belgium and France. Two points to Jeremy. Samira, who is altogether better now they are rolling in money?
J.K. Rowling. The No campaign in the Scottish referendum has got £1 million from her, and she said it's partly about there's a very tiny minority of the Yes campaign who are kind of ultra-nationalists, and she's concerned about that. And then she got bombarded with really horrific abuse on Twitter, which you have to kind of ask which was more helpful to the No campaign. Women voters, it's turned up polling-wise, are more likely to vote No at the moment, among Scottish voters. Right? And that's why the Yes campaign did a big event where they had, you know, a number of prominent women kind of campaigning for the Yes. So I think it's significant that she's come out for No, and that could be influential.
This is the thing I don't understand about the Twitter. Do you do Twitter, Lucy?
I do, and I have been lucky thus far. And that's why I'm not going to say much about Scottish independence.
Right.
they are absolutely, and again, you do have to be careful what you say. Some weeks ago, I was on the show and I made a little comment about something that had been in the news about Scottish independence, which I happen to be in complete favour of. I think it's a terrible anachronism, the whole UK thing. But because I dared to comment on it, the websites, they go crazy. Him and I, Jeremy Hardy and I, were described as lefty Oxbridge scumbags. Which is completely wrong on my account. And you didn't go to Oxbridge, did you?
No, I didn't. I applied to the University of Life and they didn't take me, so I had to go to Southampton.
They go totally bananas with you.
But you know, one of the most interesting things about the Yes campaign is if there is a successful vote, potentially, David Cameron is going to be toppled within the Conservative Party, which is one of the reasons they think Gove and Theresa May are kind of jockeying for power. So there's all kinds of reasons to vote yes, not necessarily to do with actually living in Scotland.
Well, I'll tell you, comes out of this really well. I mean, J.K. Rowling is fully in touch. She lived in Scotland. Scotland was very kind to her when she was a single mum. And if that's what the way she feels, she's given them a very tiny percentage of what... But you know where the Yes campaign money comes from?
Mm.
Comes from Chris and Colin Weir, who won the EuroMillions.
The lottery.
They won the EuroMillions, and they've given them £3.5 million, which I think is brilliant, because who hasn't been totally, completely wanted to punch people who've won the lottery or won the pools? Well, it's not going to change our life. We're going to carry on working. But we might have a little holiday in the Canary Isle. I like the people who say, what we'd like to do is basically changed the geopolitical landscape. That's worth winning the lottery for, isn't it? Well done.
It's not fair, that EuroMillions, though, is it? It's just a lottery, isn't it? Oh, groaning now.
Well, whether you're a yes or no, but I have to say, take my hat off to J.K. Rowling. Do you think she has contributed so much to this country? I do think she's...
I love her so much.
I think she's
much.
Incredible. I do think. Best-selling books, blockbuster movies, the sight of tourists running face-first into a wall at King's Cross.
Gordon Brown seems to be in favour of independence because he suggests that Cameron should have a face-to-face debate with Alex Salmond. And if this takes place, it is absolute certainty that everybody will vote to leave the UK. I mean, it's like the idea of, oh, who could we put up against Nigel Farage for a live debate on the European Union? Who's the most hated man in the Western world? Nick Clegg, let's put him on.
Gordon's really upset, though, because there is a no campaign. We're better together. Mm. And obviously, it's non-partisan, it's non-party political, but they sat in Westminster and said, well, I don't know, who's the most respected Scottish politician at the moment who's not doing a great deal? Alistair Darling, let's go with you, shall we?
He's great friends with J.K. Rowling, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, Better Together's leader, Alistair Darling. So it makes you wonder where she got that idea for that sinister kid with the white hair and the dark eyebrow. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling has made a £1 million donation to help fund the campaign against Scottish independence. Ms. Rowling explained the move in a blog post on her website. She's currently writing 6 more explanations, each one longer than the last. The political union of the kingdoms of England and Scotland occurred in 1707 with the Act of Union. Other significant dates include 1603, when James VI of Scotland was crowned King of England and Ireland, and 1975, when the Bay City Rollers became Radio 1's Record of the Week. Bob, what is the value of a good British education?
Oh, this is Michael Gove, isn't it? This is on the back of the Trojan horse thing, or the big thing in Birmingham, that the Birmingham schools were being taken over, which led to a terrible dispute between Michael Gove and, was it Theresa May?
Yes, the Home Secretary.
Home Secretary. and they had a big row. But his thing is that it's time to draw the line. There's going to be a line drawn in the sand because they need to promote British values. But the problem is, no one's absolutely sure what British values are. At the moment, the one that's top of the list is tolerance. Apparently, we're very tolerant, which is the worst possible thing in the world you can be. My neighbour's having an extension built. He's got two little kiddies and he needs more space and he's given me a schedule of works and the works are taking place within set times and that's how you're supposed to do it. And I'm a nice bloke and a good neighbour, so I am tolerating the noise that is coming from the work. I don't like it, but I'm tolerating it. And that's what tolerance is, really. You put up with things, and yet it's supposed to be the great British value, which it never used to be. We used to accept and encourage and embrace. Like the Germans came, and we thought, we don't like your food, but some of your royals are all right, so we'll... And then the French came, and we said, well, we're not going to stick it full of garlic, but we will spice our food up a little bit. And then people came from South Asia, and we didn't simply tolerate, we sort of embraced. But now, apparently, there will be none of that. There's British, and the crux of it seems to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, tombola. There was a school in Birmingham that refused to have a tombola.
How very un-British.
Well, it is. Because tombola's gambling. It's very mildest form, but it's gambling, which is a sort of anti-Islamic thing. And also, is bringing society to its knees, you know. There used to be alcoholics, and then there were drug addicts, and now there are people in their early 20s who've lost their entire houses and everything because it's so easy to bet now. So maybe it wouldn't be a bad thing to say, actually, let's take a little bit of that value and add it to ours and make gambling not such a heavy duty
thing. I thought you were saying there was a terrible tombola problem. Are they responsible for the fact that now when you do pass the parcel at children's parties, you have to have a prize in every layer?
Oh, that's so ridiculous.
And my kids were young, we did pass the parcel, and I just want to say to all the other parents, I'm in charge of when the music stops, and it's my kid's birthday. Yeah. That's British values.
I know.
What I liked was that the internet was immediately awash with sarcastic and jokey suggestions to Michael Gove as to what British values might be. And I thought, well, there's nothing more British than that, is there?
taking the mickey. Down our politicians.
Yes.
Well, the idea that some values are specifically British. I mean, you can have civic values or just sort of values of, you know, friendship and decency and how to... But, I mean, the idea... And you think, really, are we going to teach this to little kids?
Yeah, apparently,
I mean,
Gove says,
you teach an orphaned, traumatised refugee from Democratic Republic of Congo to say, mustn't grumble. I mean, is that...
After the ongoing investigation into a handful of Birmingham schools, Michael Gove has announced that all 20,000 primary and secondary schools should promote British values, despite nobody being completely clear as to what those values might be, thus promoting the great British value of vagueness. Gove's announcement led to a storm of suggestions, many of which were in fact generally accepted human values, with the only uniquely British ones pretty much boiling down to binge drinking and mistrust of the French. 2 points to
Do
Bob.
You know why we don't trust the French?
What is
they
it?
They don't binge drink. They give their kids little tiny bits of alcohol from a very early age so that their kids have a responsible, mature and civilised attitude to alcohol and are permanently drunk for their whole lives.
2 points to Bob. Lucy, which American really hates tea right now?
This would be Eric Cantor, the leader of the majority, the Republican majority in...
He's the deputy leader.
Deputy, yeah, in the House of Representatives, and he was defeated. He was standing for re-election in one of the... Do you know my idea of American politics, largely from the West Wing? There will be gaps. But yes, he was standing for re-election and was defeated by a man called Dave Brett. who is a member of the Tea Party movement. And it was a sort of David and Goliath situation. Eric Cantor had spent $5 million on his campaign, and Dave Bratt had spent about $200,000 on his campaign, which was about the same as Eric Cantor spent in steakhouses during his campaign. I don't know if he was trying to woo voters or kill them by furring their arteries, but he didn't even bother to turn up on the day of polling. He was in Washington rather than in Virginia, which is his district, so he wouldn't drive the 90 miles, which to us, 90 miles sounds like a lot, but in America, people drive that far to get their dry cleaning, don't they? So it's kind of... I think it's the same thing. The right of centre in America is like here. You have the choice between the kind of slightly weaselly nasty man or the slightly bonkers nasty man. So, because the Tea Party are kind of regarded, aren't they, as America's UKIP, except not quite as tragically weird looking. Because they're American. Everyone in American politics is gorgeous.
Well, no, except Bratt. He's a teacher, David Bratt, and his students have said a lot of his popularity stems from the fact that he looks good in a cardigan. if that is the criteria, then I would have thought, Jeremy, you'd be up for president.
Actually, for the benefit of the listeners, Sandra, I would point out that I no longer wear cardigans, because whereas I used to look quite winsome and quirky and cute in a cardigan, now I look like Rigsby in Rising Damp.
I'm a person of faith myself, but he did the same thing where he has to... Wins the election. Well done, mate. You've won the election. You've beat a really big candidate. Bang, well done. But as it says in Luke, what is impossible for man is possible with God. Why do you have to do that? Every time you score a point in basketball or win an Olympic, they have to do... Thank you to the man upstairs. That is a bloke in a flat above. And
well, they are very... I mean, for people who don't know the American Tea Party, put simply, their ideology is that the Deadwood stages are heading over the hill. But within that, they've all kinds of fundamentalist beliefs. Like, most of them don't believe in evolution, which is understandable when you look at them.
I was wondering, do they actually believe in drinking tea, or isn't that terribly English?
No, I mean, the whole thing stems, doesn't it, from throwing the tea in the harbour, which shows that they have no idea about making tea. If you don't start by throwing it in the harbour, that's hard enough. I quite like one of the most famous Tea Party members is Sarah Palin, and another high-profile hard-right American is a pastor named Terry Jones. And you think, oh, they're only a few members away from a very upsetting Monty Python tribute act. Eric Cantor, the deputy Republican leader in the US Congress, was defeated by a Tea Party candidate in a shock primary election in Virginia this week. Tea Party members tend to oppose the pro-choice movement, but if you're worried about the population boom, they also oppose firearms control and letting poor people have access to medical treatment so it balances out. 2 points to Lucy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Samira have got 4 points, but so too have Bob and Lucy. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News website.
Two meals a day are effective to treat type 2 diabetes. Researchers found that volunteers who ate two meals a day lost more weight than those who ate six.
Thanks to Mike Taylor for sending us that. Jeremy, who thinks a spoonful of statin isn't necessarily the best medicine?
Well, doctors are divided on this. If you go and see your GP and ask for advice on this, it really depends which search engine they're using. No, they don't agree. This is the problem, and it's worrying. I mean, I remember when things came out in the 70s. Oh, everyone's going to eat yogurt and Ryvita and it was all like cottage cheese, and we've ought to do that now. And all these things changed, and they used to say, well, a glass of red wine is fine before you play golf or carry out surgery. In fact, a Beaujolais, no more than two bottles on an empty stomach before brain surgery. But, you know, they used to say, don't eat fat now. They say, eat fat. Fat and skin keeps you thin. It's sugar now. Diabetes is a side effect of statins. You don't know what to think. Best thing is just have a little bit of everything. Have a little bit of statin, little bit of insulin, not too much fat, not too much crack.
The fear is that people are being prescribed something which has all these side effects when actually they should be just taking responsibility.
They're not the only drug, are they, that started out as one thing and then they had effects that did other things. Didn't aspirin started out just as a painkiller? And then it's meant to be able to help with blood thinning. And Viagra's useful if you've got washing to hang up.
statins. There was a time when the world was faced with two simple choices. It's very rare in the world that there are just two choices. It happened in when we got involved in World War II, and it happened when big blokes were faced with the choice. Either don't eat so much and take more exercise, or take one of these pills every day. Surprisingly, we erred on the side of medicine. And God bless the men who invented it and keep pumping them out.
Are you on them, Bob?
Oh, I've got one here. I've got five a day.
How come the male contraceptive pill's never taken off, then?
Doesn't taste as nice as a statin. See, the other thing about statin, you can get them in pork favour, beef favour, chorizo, which is my particular favourite.
But once you start taking statins, you're meant to take them for the rest of your life. I mean, they're like Pringles, aren't they?
Yes. Once you start, you can't stop. But the great thing is, those of us who are on statins, the rest of our life isn't as wide a canopy as you might imagine. We never look further than 10 years ahead anyway. So as long as you've got 10 years' supply of statin, it's a brilliant thing. And people, oh, do-gooders, always get involved. Oh, don't have statins, because then you don't eat enough yoghurt. No, keep having statins, they're brilliant.
A group of leading doctors and academics have written to the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, NICE, saying that plans to extend the use of statins should be scrapped. Statins are a drug that lowers cholesterol. The medical profession currently uses a risk calculator called Q-Risk-2 to decide if a person should be given statins. This is an improvement on Q-Risk-1, which just worked out which line moves fastest in Tesco's.
I went to the doctors and I had pain in my joints and she said, I am going to refer you on. And I was like, oh, my God, this is terrible. She referred me on to Weight Watchers. So I had to go back to my husband and he said, oh, did she find out what was wrong? And I went, yeah, I'm fat.
You should have said to the doctor, I want a second opinion. He said, you're ugly as well.
I've lost a stone and a half recently. I went on an airplane with my wife. It was just a short flight. And as sometimes happens for people, I couldn't fasten the belt properly. And I just mask it. But one of the flight attendants noticed and said, oh, I'll get you an extension. And what they do is they use the one that they use for the demonstration. And then, after he'd done it, then said, where's the gentleman who couldn't fasten his belt? And my wife was so angry and humiliated, and I said, yeah, and I should have punched him. And she said, really? I'm not really angry with him. Do you not see why this situation has arisen? And about 3 days later, and this is the God's honest truth, and I regret it so much, but I didn't realise, I said to her, listen, we're going on holiday next month, and I promise you that problem we had, it's not going to happen again. I've been on Amazon, and for 11 quid, you can buy your own. And the way that she looked at me made me realise that I needed to make another choice in my life.
2 points to Jeremy. Samira, who caused a go slow after getting Uber cross?
Cabbies, I think mainly in London, are furious because...
And it wasn't just London, was it? It was Madrid.
No, similar protests in Madrid, Milan, Berlin and Paris. I say similar, I imagine theirs were more stylish, but...
Technology has made it possible for people not to have to hail a black cab and they can use this Uber app and you can call up a minicab from anywhere. And, they're furious about it because, of course, you know, we'd all much rather just have the possibility of getting into a black cab and have someone rant at us about their opinions. But now
but
we can choose.
The issue is the meter, because the app acts as a sort of unofficial meter. So
because
it
calculates
measures,
distance,
it calculates
it
distance and then it calculates the fare, and it changes the fare depending on how busy the city is. So I think it's the fact that black cabs are only supposed to be the only metered cabs in London and in other cities, and now this is an unofficial meter.
And also their brains are different, you know, that because they have that knowledge, and that's one of the big things. They spend all those years studying for it, and it costs a lot of money, you take all that time, and then you get your qualification. And they've actually, brain scientists have done research, and there's a part of the brain with the memory, and in black cab drivers it actually is bigger because they've developed their memory so
But one of the reasons that taxi drivers claim to be superior to Uber is because they're licensed. And I have to say that's nonsense because I've tried to order a drink from a taxi driver and...
Not just London, because they have metered cabs at lots of train stations around the country. And I was at Liverpool Lime Street once and I got in the back of the cab. I had a tin of beer. I said, do you mind if I open my beer? And he said, no, but if you're going to drink, I'm going to skin up.
I got in a London black cab recently and I said to the bloke, I said, Waterloo. And he said, the station? I said, yes. He said, good, because you've missed the battle.
talking to one the other night, and I forgot that I hadn't told him what I do for a living. And I said, oh, we're moving house, you know, it's going to be weird getting used to a new house. And he went, oh, yeah, it's always strange sleeping in a strange bed. And I said, oh, well, not really for me, because I sleep in a strange bed most nights. And he let me off the fare. So they're good to fallen ladies of the night as well.
So how did you recompense him then?
10 minutes of stand-up.
Yeah, I think he was disappointed.
Parts of London were brought to a standstill on Wednesday due to a protest by taxi drivers. It was one of many protests in cities across Europe over the mobile phone app Uber, which allows users to accidentally book a cab on a phone when they're trying to drunkenly dial an X. Some believe that the app is unsafe, especially compared to the traditional method of walking into the road with your hand in the air shouting. Taxi. 10,000 drivers attended the protest. Well, it was 9,900, but they rounded it up to 10. London cabbies gathered around Trafalgar Square at 2 p.m, although most got there 10 minutes early and blasted their horn impatiently. 2 points to Samira. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share?
I have, Sandy. This is sent in by Mrs. Wynne Dewsbury from Clarkdale in Sheffield, who has sent us this bit from some sort of local event magazine. And it says, medieval merriment. Skipton, Castle Woods, North Yorkshire, 1 p.m. Can you imagine life with no iPads or television? Take a journey back in time and discover the crafts of your ancestors. You'll be amazed by what you can learn in an afternoon. Please bring a GPS smartphone if possible.
Any more?
I've got one.
Yes.
This is from Catherine Rock in Birmingham, and it's from the House of Lords website. The page is titled Deceased Members of the House of Lords. The information on this page is updated daily when the House of Lords is in session and at least weekly during recess.
This has come on Twitter, I don't know the words, but it's from @Guardian, and it's just two articles that were carried on the same technology section. Report that iPad users watch more pornography. Report shows Safari is used more than any other mobile browser to access website Pornhub, with 38 million users a day. And then a forum, touchscreen PCs. What's the best screen for one-handed use?
I've got a sweet thing from the BBC News website. There was a picture story about a man from Norfolk who's carved his hedge into the shape of a dragon. The caption reads, "The design could have been inspired by his time in the Far East, where John Brooker met his wife."
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Samira have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Bob and Lucy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Ottawa Citizen sent in by Russ Frame.
Following several complaints about a man exposing himself in Moonee Bay Park, police have arrested and charged Donald Popperdick of Ottawa.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Jeremy Hardy, Samira Ahmed, Bob Morris and Lucy Porter. In the chair with Sandy Toxic, and the news is read by me, Diana Speed. The chair script is written by John Hunter, Gareth Quinn and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson-Church and Mike Stavis. The producer was Lindsay Banner.
To listen again to any of our comedies on Radio 4, please go to bbc.co.uk/radio4/comedy.
What's new and funny and has a price?
Heard the one about the BBC search for a stand-up?
Yes!
Comedy's most prestigious new talent search is back.
The BBC Radio New Comedy Award.
Previous finalists have included Sarah Millican, Rod Gilbert and Lee Mack.
I didn't win, I was robbed.
And it's a fantastic opportunity to launch yourself onto the world of comedy.
Are you what the nation's been waiting for?
The BBC Radio New Comedy Award.
To find out more, go to the BBC Radio 4 Extra website.